And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy!
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds!
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
This podcast is brought to you by DirecTV Stream. Get your TV together with the best of live and on demand. Learn more at DirecTV.com.
The culture is the culture. It's 4 to 6 A to B, competitive excellence, and the brotherhood. The plan to win has never changed. So the culture here and the plan to win is always going to be here at Ohio State.
Welcome back to 4-6 with AMB, your Ohio State podcast brought to you by The Athletic. This is Bill Landis, joined by Ari Wasserman. Ohio State loses to Oregon, 35-28. And Ari, I guess my first question to you would be, if Ryan Day spent less time at practice glad-handing Netflix comedians like Sebastian Maniscalco, do you think Ohio State would have won that game on Saturday?
Do you think Sebastian Maniscalco was in the front row
of the game going, "What are you doing?" I don't know, man. I called that game a helmet game before the week and into the week. And I didn't know I was talking about Ohio State. Oh my God, was I wrong.
Whew.
Like, I mean, there's no other way to put it. Boy, was I wrong. Like, in every aspect of the way a human being would process a football game and a team, I was wrong. Like, I am so appalled by what I saw on Saturday that, like, I know that there's overreaction. I know that there's reaction, and I know there's rationality. And you'll bring me into the realm of rationality. But, bro, that was, like, that was worse than 18 Maryland, I think.
Well, yeah,
and I'm not saying like
they beat Maryland, yeah. So that's right.
I'm not even talking about wins and losses or yardage or whatever. That was like Shooter McGavin on the green with his arms out as the ball goes in. Like I couldn't believe what I was watching.
Yeah, they got pushed around. They got like basically. I mean, on I'm trying to think. I guess it was the national championship last year, but I almost don't count that. Like, the last time Ohio State just got, like, its ass kicked up front on both sides of the ball for the entire game, in addition to, like, being outclassed scheme-wise and just, like, generally not looking ready to play.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I would count the national championship since the team had 900 first-round picks on it and is just generally better. And I don't think it's appalling when you get your butt kicked by a better team. Ohio State got its butt kicked by a team that isn't even close to being as good.
That was also missing its two best players.
And missing its two best players. And it's just like, I think you can line it up again next week. And with competent coaching, Ohio State could beat that team by 25. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that the spread was correct. I think that Ohio State, you know, for all the people who don't want to let go of their season, if they get it squared away, is talented enough to win a bunch. But, like, I don't think this is a national championship caliber team, personnel-wise.
Certainly like, doesn't look like it, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And I know that everybody is just, let's get the defense fixed, we'll figure it out, we'll win the Big Ten, one loss big, we're still going to be into the playoff. And it's like, yes, I believe that's true. If Ohio State is a one-loss Big Ten champion at the end of the year, I think they'll still be in the playoff. Goals are still out there. All the things that the coach will say during a press conference, you know, it all still exists. But there is nothing about the organization of the defensive staff, the inability to line up correctly, the overutilization of personnel rotation, the wrong personnel on the field for large portions of the game. You have a defensive back who's limping for the entire first half playing. There's no pass rush generated. They are calling timeouts like maniacs. They're getting blown off the football. They're slow. Like, I felt like I was watching a Big Ten West team during a bad game.
Yeah, it felt like you were watching, like, I don't know, like Northwestern play. Like,
yeah.
Like a good Northwestern team playing against
Ohio State in the Big Ten championship.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was like one team is pretty good, but it's just not going to happen today. And it's like, you know me, man. Like, during games, when Ohio State's losing, I'm Mr. Pound that live button.
Yeah.
Pound that live button. And in the second quarter on Saturday's game, I was like, bro, I wouldn't touch this with a million-foot pole.
Yeah.
Because like, people are like, are you going to smash this? Are you going to smash this? I'm like, no, I'm not.
Yeah, you texted me during the game and asked me if I thought they were going to lose. And I said, or at halftime, and I said, I don't know if I think they're going to lose, but it definitely doesn't feel like the Minnesota game. Like the Minnesota game, I was fairly certain that Ohio State was going to come back and win that game, and like this game just did not have that feel to it at all.
Yeah, there was a moment too where Ohio State was down by 14 in the third quarter, and it was like 4-1 that they would win, and like to me that would be an attractive thing to do, because Ohio State's offense I thought could get what it wanted for the most part, and that's the most ironic part of this whole game. You know, the defense actually got two stops in a row with Ohio State right. down 7, and their offense couldn't do it. And there was just one missed throw that would have tied the game. But, man, I just like when you try to – I read a lot of stuff on Twitter about this is a national championship caliber team when things click and they'll have a second chance. And a lot of the 2014 comparisons, even I made one in the middle of the game of – you know, this is the first time since 2014 Ohio State's been trailing at halftime for their first two games, and then they won the national title. Like, I get all that. And I try to transport myself back into how I felt about Ohio State in 2014 after the Virginia Tech game. And if you remember that, I was just like, this team sucks. Mm-hmm. And then they won the national championship, and things clicked, and I understand that. But this, to me, felt more like 2018 than 2014.
I don't think you're alone in that. I think it's probably, I mean, it's certainly too early to say which direction it's going, but I understand the sentiment because 2018, I mean, if you were, describe the 2018 Ohio State Buckeyes to somebody and you would say their defense was terrible, they couldn't get lined up, their schemes sucked, they just were not well coached on that side of the ball, and then offensively they could throw it around the yard, but they couldn't run the ball well enough to have a balanced offense, and they just couldn't consistently be dominant offensively to win the way they needed to win. And that's kind of what it looked like on Saturday. So, I don't know. I do think some of the offensive stuff I'm not super worried about, like their relative inability to run the ball compared to how they've run it in the past and how they ran it last week. Like, I think that gets fixed. I just think they're too good up front and their running backs are too good for that to be a problem that persists. And I think we'll talk about C.J. Stroud later. I want to put a pin in that for a second because the defense to me feels more urgent. The defense is, in my opinion, is broken. Like this coordinator coordinating this defense with this personnel does not work.
Yes.
So
and I don't know how do you fix that in the middle of the season?
No idea.
But because like this is the same thing that we were talking about after. Remember the podcast that we had the morning after they lost to Alabama in the national championship game? Yeah. It was, okay, that didn't work. They have an entire offseason to figure this out. Let's see if they can get a different scheme in, a different, flavor of personnel in there and see if they can fix it. I was like, to me, the biggest, most alarming thing about incompetence is the persistence of mediocrity without change.
Yeah. It is... It blows my mind a little bit. Like their defense was not good all of last year, and you can say like, well, it was a shortened season, statistical outliers against Indiana and Alabama pumped the numbers up, and if they played a full season, they would even out a little bit. Like, okay, that's fine. They still weren't a good defense. And to come off of that season, go through this entire offseason talking about, oh, all we needed was time. All we needed was one more buildup. And then to come out and like do the same shit. They're doing the exact same thing they did last year. The only change they've made is like they replaced their Sam linebacker with a smaller guy who's a little faster, which is like what every team in college football does already. So like they didn't change anything. And their defense sucks. It sucked last year. It sucks this year because they looked at what they had and like, oh, that was good enough. Let's do that again. Like I that doesn't compute with me how you could look at what they did last year and just like run it back. I don't get like I don't understand. And that's a failure of Ryan Day, I think number one, but also like Kerry Combs too, who can, like he's 10 games into this and just looks like way in over his head.
And then he said he's not very good at organizing, which I thought was an interesting, you know, situation. It's like the thing too is Kerry Combs is a beloved figure in Ohio State, you know, history.
Complicated. This is complicated. Yeah.
Yeah, and like I don't know, he was a hell of a defensive backs coach, both in recruiting and development, right? Mm-hmm. He has lost the fan base.
100%.
Like they are, I can't think of a time where an Ohio State assistant was Bill Davis. I just don't think that his role was important enough for it to match this, because I'm not saying that he didn't cause them a lot of problems,
yeah,
but linebackers coach doesn't necessarily, you know, rise to the same level of fire the coordinator. Like every single person in my mentions yesterday was fire Combs on the tarmac.
Yeah. And I think Ed Warner got that in 15.
Ed Warner did get that in 15. You're right. Yeah. And people don't remember this, but when Luke Fickell was a defensive coordinator, he got it pretty good too.
He certainly did. Yeah.
And now I think his team is going to be 4-0 in 2 weeks. And that's a prediction that we made earlier on in the year. Indiana sucks and so does Notre Dame. And I think Cincinnati's going to beat both of them, but that's a discussion for another time. By the way, everybody sucks.
Yeah.
So, like, that's the good – take solace in that if you're an Ohio State fan. Everybody sucks. And, like, if you can figure it out, I think their single high safety, slow personnel is good enough to win the Big Ten. But it's just, like, I don't think that they could beat anybody else in the playoff with what's going on right now.
I mean, yeah.
And it's, like,
yeah,
it's up to the coordinator to identify that. And also, Bill – take coaching away for 5 seconds. Take scheme away for 5 seconds. Are their players good? Are their linebackers good? Are their defensive backs good? Because they don't look good to me.
Yeah, I think I think Cody Simon is good. Cody Simon played 35 snaps against Oregon. He needs to play more. I actually thought like Denzel Burke has played 2 games and led the corners, and he played 74 snaps against Oregon. He played all but one snap against Oregon, but he played pretty well. I thought Cameron Brown, who you were talking about, you were alluding to when you said that there was a corner out there who was limping, like is clearly not healthy, but he played 58 snaps, and I thought he played really well. I guess if he's not fully healthy, he can't play the entire game. Obviously, you don't want to make him do that. But
I was surprised he was out there.
I was like seeing how he was like favoring whatever he's favoring. So I was surprised.
It felt like Devontae Smith in the national title game.
Yeah,
Jalen Waddle.
Jalen Waddle. Yeah. But like I actually thought both those corners played well. I thought that Josh Proctor had been playing well, and he unfortunately suffered that injury. And we don't have an update on that yet. But Ryan Day didn't sound optimistic about Josh Proctor coming back this year. That's kind of it. That's kind of it, though.
Okay, let me whittle it down a little bit for you. Does Ohio State have a good linebacker, Cody Simon?
I think Craig Young. Cody Simon is pretty good, and I think Taraja Mitchell has played fairly well in these 2 games.
Why are they slow?
I don't know that they're
slow.
I don't know that they're.
They're playing slow.
They play slow. I don't know that they are slow. Yeah. They play slow. That's a problem with the defense as a whole. Like you watch the ball is snapped. You watch these guys, and they look like there's a million things going through their head rather than just like watching what's happening in front of them and reacting to it. Like the juxtaposition between Ohio State's linebacker play and Oregon's linebacker play, I thought was pretty stark. Like Oregon's linebackers just fly to the ball.
Yeah, fly to the ball.
Ohio State's linebackers do not fly to the ball. They trip over their own feet. They're stagnant. There's not a lot of instinct there. And I would say that
here's the way I'll put that. Here's the way I'll put that. I feel like Ohio State's linebackers are always chasing.
Yeah.
And I never feel like they're arriving.
Yeah, I think. I don't know. I think it's a fair assessment. I don't know how much of that is, like, lack of athleticism I don't think it's, I mean, maybe with some guys it is, but I, overall, I'm not sure that's what it is. I think it's over-diagnosis, overly complicated scheme, and guys who, like, just can't get out of their own way because they're over.
So this is the Greg Schiano problem again?
Feels like it a little bit. It feels like it a little bit. Like, I don't, and that's just from, like, watching how they react. Like, we don't know what all they're told to do, but I think if you watched in 2018, it just felt like, rather than scrap their shitty scheme and, like, play something that's simpler, they, like, overcompensated by putting in all these checks and different responsibilities and responses to things that the offense was doing. And it felt like those players were paralyzed by that, and it feels like these players now are being a little paralyzed by that. And that's not, like, a cure-all. I'm not saying, like, stop doing that and you'll be fine, because it's deeper than that. But I think that's part of it.
Is Ohio State's past results in recruiting linebacker positions starting to creep up?
Yeah, I think past results recruiting defense in general is starting to creep up on them a little bit. Their defensive line is not – watching an Ohio State team that is incapable of stopping the run with, like, its front four is a little jarring. They don't typically get beat up like that up front, and they got beat up for, like, the majority of that game.
Did they have a single sack in that game?
No. I think they hit Anthony Brown twice. Oh, I'm looking at Pro Football Focus right now. They did not have a sack. They had 7 total pressures and hit the quarterback 4 times. Yeah, they don't.
So the defense, and yeah. I mean, like, there is no redeeming takeaway from that game defensively.
The only thing I would even throw out there was JTT. Redeeming quality. No, I didn't think he played very well either. The only thing I would throw out there was redeeming quality of the defense is the cornerback play against the pass. I thought was pretty good. I thought Denzel Burke and Cameron Brown were good, to be more specific.
Yeah.
JTT was fine. Look at his grades, he graded out well. But I thought there were times where he got kind of blocked out of place too.
Also, he's a true freshman playing in the second game ever. So, like, you know, like, yeah. I just thought that in the he flashed a little bit of time.
Yeah, yeah.
But
he batted down that pass late, right? When they one of the two stops. Yeah, that was a nice play.
Yeah, yeah. Also, I thought he was going to catch it. To be honest,
that would've been nice.
What about scoring on the same play 3 times?
So that's, like,
because it wasn't the same exact play, was it?
2 of them were the exact same play. And the third was, like, a similar idea. So what Oregon knew that Ohio – this is, like, I think, the biggest problem with Kerry Combs as coordinator. This there's not a lot to this scheme. They basically play – they play a single high safety. They play cover 1 or cover 3, and that's about it. And that's, like, what Jeff Hafley did too. Like, I saw a lot of, like, boy, Ohio State really misses Jeff Hafley. Like, it's the same goddamn defense. So, like, Jeff Hafley's not Vince Lombardi. But the one thing that Jeff Hafley, I think, did have – that Kerry Combs does not have is a feel for when to call man and when to call zone. And it's, I don't think that's, like, some kind of, like, extra sensory perception that Jeff Hafley has, but he had it. And Kerry Combs does not appear to, because I feel like every time Ohio State lines out there, it's either, like, this is the cover 3 week or this is the cover 1 week. And whenever he decides on that week is the thing they do for the entire game. And Oregon knew that they were going to get man coverage on 3rd down, and all they did was have the tight end or the receiver who was on the outside in man coverage crack down on the linebacker, and the person who was covering that receiver is supposed to exchange with the linebacker so that there was a body on the outside. And what happened was 2 defenders went with the guy who was cracking down on the linebacker, and there was nobody over there. And, oh, by the way, your free safety who had the play because Josh Proctor got hurt takes terrible angles to go try to clean up a play. So, like, it was a comedy of errors there, but a simple solution to stopping that would have just been, like, play zone once on 3rd down. Like, mix your coverages once. Kerry Combs doesn't mix coverages at all. He plays one thing for the entire game. At least that's what it feels like to me. Maybe you can look up numbers, I guess, and tell me I'm wrong on that, but that's what it feels like. They are incredibly predictable and easily manipulated with Kerry Combs as defensive coordinator.
All right, so here's my overall. If I was at the game, here's what I would have written. Not that you wrote the wrong thing or the right thing. This is just what I was thinking and what I probably would have written.
Yep.
When Urban Meyer was at Ohio State, the first year they went undefeated. Mm-hmm. The second year they went undefeated and then lost to the Michigan State Spartans in the Big Ten championship game.
Yep.
The following game, they lost to Clemson. Won their opener against whatever overmatch opponent they played, then lost to Vatek. That was three losses in four games. And at that point, Ohio State fans went from, oh my God, we have Urban Meyer. This is amazing. Everything's great. We're never going to lose another regular season game ever again. To like, oh my God, what the hell is going on with our team? And there were some questions about Ohio State's defensive scheme. If you remember why the personnel in the secondary was kind of off.
Yep.
If you remember exactly, like I have to go back and read what we were complaining about at that time. But I remember Von Bell and the safeties was a major problem, and the defensive scheme to a certain extent was. And, you know, of course, part of that too was Braxton Miller's arm falling off. To me, it feels like that is the same intersection that Ryan Day is in right now. And it's not quite as egregious because they made it to the national championship game last year, but they got their ass kicked against Alabama, a team that they're supposed to match up with. Your quarterback is different the following year. You lose the second game of the season to a very beatable but sexy helmet non-conference schedule. And now you're in a position where what you do as a head coach is going to define what happens for the next year or two. And I feel like that's the position that, do you see the parallels between those two things?
I do. But like Urban made a change with his defensive coordinator after 2013. He brought in Chris Ash. He brought in Chris Ash, I guess, to co-coordinate the defense with Luke Fickell. But they changed the scheme. So like, I don't know. I think you're right. I think it does feel like they're in a similar position, but I don't know.
I don't mean that like everything is matching up perfectly. I feel like they're in the same critical juncture at the same exact time in their tenure.
Right, but I guess what I was getting at was like that steps to remedy that had already been taken by the time Ohio State lost to Virginia Tech. It just took a little bit, and like they weren't like even really like egregious defensive issues there. But like Urban saw what wasn't good enough and made the change prior to them losing to Virginia Tech. Like the Michigan State and Clemson losses were enough for him to make the change. And
yeah.
And the Alabama, how bad the defense was last year, apparently were not enough for Ryan Day to make the change. And it might be too late for that. Like, I don't know. He can fire his coordinator in the middle of the season. But like, I don't, like if he shuffles the deck again, and like he doesn't even have to fire Kerry Combs, he just make Kerry Combs a cornerbacks coach again, like, and makes Paul Rhodes a defensive coordinator. I have no idea. Like, they'll probably still run the same defense, right? They're not going to change their scheme in the middle of the season.
I don't think you physically can change your scheme in the middle of the season, can you?
No. I mean, in theory, they should have been like practicing the proper changeups to this scheme and like have something a little different in their bag that I guess they could go to moving forward. But the fact that they haven't done that through two games leads me to believe they don't have that in that bag. Have that in their bag. This is like who they are. So I don't know. Something needs to change. And Ryan Day always says like, well, it's personnel, it's scheme, or it's coaching. Like right now, it's all three. And I don't know where you start to fix that.
This is the first time it's been all three.
Yeah. Yeah, probably. Because even in 18, like Chase Young was on that team. Jeff Okuda was on that team. They were younger players, but I don't know if they were bad players. The scheme sucked. They weren't coached particularly well because Bill Davis was their linebackers coach. But two of the three stood out more there than now. Like now it feels to me like all three are an issue, like a pretty glaring issue. And I suppose a simple solution to the personnel piece is just like to stop playing so many guys.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
Which little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
Well, what do you think of the rotation? It feels to me that, like, we used to joke, and if you remember back in the days where you and I were best friends living in Columbus, and you had first taken the job, but, like, Kerry Combs, through all those times where he would have, what, six first-round draft picks, defensive backs, or whatever that streak was, he would rotate his best corners out of the game. And we would be like, why are you doing that? And we would tease him in practice, like, what are you doing? Why are you doing that? And he would explain why he felt that was the best thing to do. Because remember, Denzel Ward was coming in for somebody. And I can't remember who it was specifically, but we were like, why is Denzel Ward coming into the game when you have whoever it was?
Maybe like Garyon Conley, maybe. Yeah.
It was somebody that got, it was also somebody who got drafted in the first round. Mm-hmm. I just can't remember. The years kind of blend together. And then Kerry Combs was like, because Denzel Ward is a first round draft pick. And it was just like, oh, okay. And then, and that's what happened, you know, and that they were all very, very good. But I feel like they're rotating because they don't know who's good, not because they have too many good players.
I feel the same way. I think that's part of it. And part of it also might be like guys are hurt. I don't know. Like Cody Simon, from what we could gather, had been like in and out of practice like all summer. And I like is playing with like a brace on his arm. So like maybe he is just not in a place physically that he can be an every down linebacker. And that's why he plays 35 snaps and Tommy Eichenberg plays 38. That's why, like, I guess Cam Brown didn't play every snap at cornerback and Legend Cavazos played some. I think that maybe that's part of the reason, but I think there's also something happening here where, yeah, they don't know. And Ryan Day kind of said that, like, oh, it was so close in the summer. Like, every position battle was so tight that we felt like everybody deserved to play. Like, well, very clearly there's a line of demarcation here at a lot of these positions, I feel like. Like, I feel like we've seen enough through two games, and frankly, I thought we saw enough after one game, that there are just some guys who shouldn't be playing. Yet they continue to play.
And it's like, this is a college football podcast, and we're talking to unpaid players, and I feel like none of us want to just come out here and be like, so-and-so sucks. But I think we all can kind of put the pieces together in terms of who you might want to start with.
Well, and some of the guys are young, too. It's not to say yeah, they can't be good someday. Just like some of them don't look ready right now.
Yeah, no, and I'm not trying to be an asshole, but there are certain, you know, personnel packages where I look at there and I'm just like, what's on the field right now?
I mean, they played, yeah. And I think some of the stuff they're doing is like, it's not irresponsible is not the right word, but like the idea, I'm not trying to single him out because like it was far from his fault that Ohio State lost, but like Paliano Teote like just gets eligible and he's on the field for some important downs and like he got lost in the wash a little bit. I don't know why he's playing in like a high leverage moment like that when he like just got eligible and you yourself as a staff has said to yourself like, well, we haven't been giving him first team reps in practice because we didn't know if he was ever going to play. And like 3 days earlier, Ryan Day said like he wasn't eligible. So like there's some, and he only played four snaps, but there were four pretty important snaps. One of them was a touchdown for Oregon and one of them was like a key third down that Oregon converted backed up against its own end zone. So like those kind of decisions, like I don't get that.
Yeah.
Work a guy like that into the fold slower. Like, there's no, you don't have to play him there.
Yeah, I agree with you. So what is your confidence level, if at all, that Ohio State can right the ship on this stuff?
Because
mine is very, very low.
Like, on a scale of 1 to 10, it's like a 3, maybe?
I think that they are going to be successful in masking it.
Well, that's the thing that is unfortunate about where we currently are, is that they play Tulsa and Akron and Rutgers and Maryland in the next 4 weeks, and I think we're...
Dude, Rutgers is good, man.
Rutgers is pretty good, actually. They're 2-0.
I actually that was my play of the week last Saturday. Rutgers -2. I don't know how we got here, but it's how we got here.
They pummeled Temple.
Yeah.
And then they beat Syracuse.
No. I meant this Saturday. When they beat Syracuse.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah. Whatever. Ohio State plays Tulsa and Akron and Rutgers and Maryland in its next four games, and it's going to look like, at least it better look like, some things are fixed. If it doesn't look like things are fixed, then we need to have a different conversation. But I think it will look like things are fixed and none of it will be real. Like, we're not going to know anything about it. And it was kind of like that in 2014. Like, they were bad in the beginning of the year. They looked awesome in, like, the next 4 or 5 weeks. And we didn't really know how much of it was real until they went and played Michigan State. And this could be a similar deal where we don't really know what's going on. Maybe until they play Indiana, but possibly, like, not even until they play Penn State on Halloween.
Yeah. So have you ever seen that meme of Flex Tape?
When
it's the infomercial guy. And there's a tub of water that and there's a water coming out of the tube and there's a salesman and it's like Ohio State's defense. Defensive issues. Maryland.
Tulsa. Yeah.
I also feel like you could Ohio State is going to I think they are probably going to beat Penn State and Michigan. And I think they're probably going to still... I don't think, like, I've changed my mind that they're going to win the Big Ten. But I don't think this team has a shot in hell of winning a playoff game.
I don't... Not as their defense is currently situated. I think... Well, like, maybe if they... Maybe. This is like a reach, maybe. But if they just...
Yeah, you're at a three. Don't forget that. Yeah,
if they just start playing their best 11 players... And let those guys get comfortable and figure out whatever it is they're being asked to do over the course of the next month. Maybe they can settle in and this can be like a top 60 defense rather than a defense that's ranked 112th in the country right now behind every other program in the state of Ohio, which is, I can't believe I'm saying that.
Behind Bowling Green.
Behind Bowling Green, behind Kent State. Yeah. They are 112th in total defense. But. Bright side, they're only 105th in yards per play, so they have that going for them. But I think if they settle on who their guys are and just like let them play and let them grow comfortable, maybe they can get some growth in that way. But I just don't have any faith in the combination of personnel, scheme, and coaching right now that this gets figured out to the point where they can do anything other than win the Big Ten.
Yeah, yeah. And the thing about it is that like an inherently flawed team can win the Big Ten.
For sure. They're still
and it's like I think that like Penn State looks pretty good. Yeah, yeah. I mean the talent gap was there for Oregon, it didn't matter, and it's just like maybe I need to pipe down with the Stars Matter bullshit because like sometimes it's not that here's my take on it. Stars matter when you're building a program. They aren't a metric for individual games, and if you have very deep issues with your personnel and your stars are lacking in certain position groups, which they clearly are right now, there are holes that can be exposed.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I know everyone's like, oh, stars don't matter. Look, they lost to Oregon. It's like, I hate when you say that because one of my...
Also, Oregon's number 9 in talent composite.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But, like, also, it's like, oh, helmets don't stop concussions every single time somebody gets a blow to the head. Let's stop using them altogether. That's not how life works.
Right.
Okay. It's not an infallible metric that's going to decide who wins every single football game ever played. But Ohio State has an abundance of talent at a few positions, and they have a weakness at a few others. And the positions that they're weak at are the positions that they're weak at on the field right now.
Mm-hmm.
It's like there's a direct correlation between that. So, like, I don't know if defensive line falls in that category because they've got a lot of really high-rated players. But, like, Jack Sawyer, who had a few really good plays in the game, isn't, you know, quite there yet. I don't really feel like I don't feel Chase Harrison. Or not Chase Harrison.
Zach Harrison.
Sorry, it's been a long night. I don't feel Zach Harrison when I'm watching the game. You know, Tyreek Smith is a problem at times, but not consistent. Like, I don't know, you know, what's going on with the defensive line, and I'm sure they'll figure that out. They've got really good players there. But, like, Legend Cavazos is a very raw young talent who, you know, has a lot to figure out still. Cam Brown can barely walk. You know, Denzel Burke is going to be a star in a year, but, like, he's still a true freshman. Like, I don't know if they have what they need in the defensive backfield to get where they need to go unless you just leave your two best players on the field and let them play.
Especially now that Josh Proctor's hurt, too, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, I don't know who the best linebackers are, but I feel like Cody Simon is probably one of them. Taraja Mitchell is probably another one. And it's just like quit rotating guys and just let them play.
Yeah.
And let them gain experience. And it's just like, you know what, guys? They're probably not going to win the national championship this year, but they're probably going to be in position to win one in the next 2 or 3 years. So get your young players out there, let them ride, let them feel good about themselves, and then come into next year as like Alabama. because like they are going to have a lot of really good players on their team in 2 years. So, you know, I know that's not the way people want to hear it. And I know that, you know, winning a national championship is still the goal at Ohio State and will continue to be the goal every single year. But, you know, in a situation too, where it's just like, it might not be happening this year, then you just kind of, you know, let your guys ride. And I don't know if they feel like they're doing that with the rotation, but I think the rotation is killing them.
The rotation is not, it's not helping. That's for damn sure. I thought, just on the subject of personnel, he didn't play a whole lot, but I actually thought Kevon Pope played pretty well. He didn't play at all last week against Minnesota, and he has not played a ton in his career relative to the other guys in his class. But the one thing that sticks out to me kind of about all the linebackers is they don't have much of a feel in the passing game of like dropping into the correct zones and playing with the correct depth and reading the quarterback the right way. And Kevon Pope did that like 4 times in the 7 snaps he was on the field against Oregon. Now, maybe I think back and look, maybe they were all like obvious passing downs and it made it easier on him. But like I would let him play a little more maybe. Because the guys are rolling out there in pass situations for the most part, and I would include Cody Simon in that too, although he's been a little better, look totally lost when the other team is throwing the ball, which is a problem when you're trying to defend like intermediate zones with linebackers. So I'm curious to see if he might play a little more and just like how that rotation at linebacker in particular shakes out, because it seems like it's too wide open right now. Losing Josh Proctor is a huge deal. I felt like you had one guy on this defense. You have to have a reliable guy who can play post safety, obviously, to play this defense. And Josh Proctor looked like he was trending in that direction, and there's nobody else on the roster who I would even like put in that same category. So like losing him to me means you need to change this defense. Like forget everything else we talked about. Like you don't have anybody to play post safety anymore. You have to change the defense. And maybe that'll be enough to nudge him in that direction, but I don't know. But here's what we'll move on to offense in a second. What I want to ask you while we wrap up the defensive discussion is, what do you think is going to happen? Are they going to change the coordinator? Are they going to change the scheme? Are they going to change nothing? Like, what do you think is going to happen?
I think they're going to make marginal changes to the defense that are going to be good enough to win the Big Ten, and they're going to get their butts kicked on national television, and then they're going to change their scheme after the year.
Yeah, I think that's probably most likely.
Yeah.
I am interested now if the Josh Proctor deal forces their hand to be more dramatic in their changes, but I think you're right.
I mean, what would you do? I get it. You're not a defensive coordinator. You're really good at Madden, and you're good at fantasy football. But like, I want to know, like, as a reporter, what do you think would be a reasonable thing to do, or where do you think would be a reasonable place to start?
Stop playing single high safety. I would stop playing single high safety. I would be more aggressive, and being more aggressive might mean that you give up more big plays, but Ohio State is not good enough man-to-man on defense right now to just rely on winning individual battles. They have to ratchet up the pressure. They have to ratchet up the aggression and the creativity with this defense, because there is none right now. so those are the changes that I would make. Like, I don't know. Maybe it's too much to ask them to like stop playing the single high safety defense they've played for 2+ seasons now, but I feel like there are enough reasonable change-ups to that in terms of split safety coverages that they could begin to implement in addition to becoming a more attacking style of defense to make up for their lapses in personnel.
Will you just have them turn on the Alabama tape and then poke them and say, do that.
Yeah. So, I don't know.
They have the players to do it.
Yeah, they do. I think they do. That's why I don't think they're just throwing out.
I think
out.
They
they're
do. Not, I don't know.
Throw, I don't think they're throwing out 11 bad players. I think they are not as good up front as they thought they would be. And maybe that's where some of these issues start. Perhaps they thought that they could run it back because they'd be better up front. They're not. They're not awful up front, but they're not as good as Ohio State has been in the past. And you need to compensate for that, which is to say, like, blitz your linebackers, be aggressive, draw up something that isn't just sitting back in cover one and cover three and getting picked apart by offensive coordinators who know what you're doing on every single snap, and like fans in the stands can call out what play the offense is running because it's so predictable and so obvious.
It's like you also, as you were watching the game, kind of had a feeling of like, this is what's coming and they're not going to be able to stop it. And it's like the funniest thing about this whole thing, and I think this will be a nice transition to the offense, Bill. But I thought Ohio State was going to win when they got the second stop. down 7.
So did I.
I thought they were going to tie the game, like on the drive where Stroud missed a wide open Garrett Wilson walking into the end zone. Like, I thought they were going to score on that drive, and I thought they were going to win the game. And if they would have won the game in an alternate universe, you might be on. Like, I think that most podcasts will be like, well, changes have to be made. They got through it. All they had to do was win by one, all that same stuff we were saying before the podcast. Mm-hmm. I think we would have very similar tones right now, even if they would have won that game.
Yeah, the defense is still broken, even if they won that game.
Yes. But Ohio State had its chance multiple times on offense to win that football game and didn't. And there's a lot of bench C.J. Stroud stuff out there. Where are you on the quarterback position?
I'm still sticking with C.J. Stroud. He is like... tell me what you think of this, like watching a game on television. Like, he looks hurt to me.
Like, he looks hurt.
Like, he is... he's very clearly, I think, like favoring his throwing shoulder. And I thought, like, he was throwing high early on in the game, and I thought, like, it was most obvious there. But then he, like, settled in. Like, he was throwing some of those Justin Fields wide hash to the far sideline throws that, like, I didn't know he had the arm strength for. So, like, I don't know how much he's actually hindered by that, but I think he is pretty clearly playing injured. And he, like, admitted as much. He wouldn't, like, get super specific with it, but he said, like, he had a tough week. He was banged up. And then he was asked specifically about a shoulder, and he said, he didn't say, like, I'm not hurt. He said, like, it's not bothering me. And, like, we had that one practice where we were there, and, like, he didn't throw the ball.
Yeah.
So, like, you're just putting pieces together, it leads you to this conclusion. But even with all that said, like, he missed throws. And, like, the one you said, like, he missed Garrett Wilson. Like, he, like, got hit and, like, had to pull the string a little bit on the throw. And then on the other end, like, Garrett Wilson, like, stumbled out of his route. I thought there was a chance there for Garrett Wilson to run under that ball. It was not exactly where it needed to be, but Garrett looked to me like he kind of lost his footing at the end of his route, at the top of his route, and the play just didn't connect. But, like, that wasn't really, to me, like C.J. Stroud missing a throw. I think he got hit, and he had to pull the string a little bit. So, like, that's whatever. But he still missed throws. I'm not saying he didn't miss throws. He certainly did miss throws. He certainly still at times looked hesitant. He definitely got locked on to some of those underneath routes. Like, there were a couple plays late where if he would have just looked to his left and saw the running back in the flat for a check down, there was nobody in front of him, and he just never got there because he locked on to the guy running across the middle of the field. And I don't want to fault a young quarterback too much for locking on to Chris Olave, Garrett Wilson, and Jaxon Smith-Njigba when they're so good, but I think that has happened a couple times in the last two games. But the kid threw for, like, almost 500 yards and 3 touchdowns, and, like, I thought made some really impressive and some aggressive throws over the middle too, and he wasn't helped by drops in some cases. So I'm, like, not really anywhere close to make a change at quarterback. Like, I get it. Like, there's talented guys behind him, and I don't know. C.J. Stroud's not setting the world on fire, I guess, but I don't think C.J. Stroud's been bad. So I'm not there.
There is something about losing, even when it's not the offense's fault per se, that makes people want to see what's back there.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think – listen, I think it's insane that Tyler Buchner isn't playing at Notre Dame. I think it's insane that J.J. McCarthy isn't playing at Michigan.
Sam Hewitt at Washington.
Yeah, these quarterbacks, to me, are good enough to play. And I don't doubt that Kyle McCord is good enough to play.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic.
See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code The Athletic and you'll get a 1-year subscription to The Athletic plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I think that CJ Stroud is solid. I don't think he's dynamic yet. And I'm just not saying that he can never be dynamic. But you're watching football through the lens of a fan base that just got done watching Justin Fields play for the past 2 years. Mm-hmm. And I don't think people really realize how freaking good that guy was. And now you have a guy in CJ Stroud who's young, but also doesn't just drip and ooze with athleticism. And he's hesitant at times. He throws the ball too late at times. He doesn't know when to run at times. And that wasn't anything that you ever had to deal with when you had Justin Fields, the great Justin Fields, as your quarterback. Mm-hmm. That said, I wonder if Kyle McCord, though it would look very different, has that type of athleticism or that arm strength or that flash that CJ Stroud doesn't have being a five-star prospect. Or even, for that matter, in a few weeks, Quinn Ewers. And I wonder if that is something that is going to be a necessity for this offense moving forward, especially when Ohio State has to live in a world where they don't have the two best receivers in college football running routes every play. And I think people are anxious about that. And maybe it's too soon. Maybe it's irrational. But watching the game, I knew Ohio State had a chance to score. But my confidence wasn't because I thought C.J. Stroud was a world beater. My confidence was because I didn't think there was anybody who could cover Garrett Wilson and Chris Olave. And guess what? They couldn't.
Yeah.
And they didn't win the game. And they didn't score game-tying touchdowns on either of the two drives after Ohio State's defense got a miraculous stop. And I understand there's extenuating circumstances for why they didn't. You know, Garrett Wilson tripped. There was pressure. The offensive line wasn't playing with the way they were. They couldn't run the ball. All those things are all valid. But I didn't feel like, okay, Ohio State's got C.J. Stroud back there. They're going to make something happen. And I don't even know if it's fair to put that on him in his second game as a quarterback. But considering the fact that quarterbacks in this generation who pay thousands of dollars for, you know, personal quarterback coaches and go to the opening and are working on their craft and their footwork and are doing drills with tennis balls on the beach and doing things that quarterbacks in 1995 weren't doing and are ready as a result of that to play earlier, if there isn't something to explore there. Now, Ryan Day makes $8 million a year or whatever it is to define who the best quarterback is, and he knows more about quarterbacks than we do. But as a casual observer of the game, I can understand why somebody might want to see what else is there. Because I don't think that... I think Kyle McCord could have thrown for 500 yards, too.
Well, yeah.
Like I'm not going to sit there and be like, yeah, the guy threw for 400 or 500 yards, and because of that, I'm out. Like, that's not... Like, to me... There was a lot of wide open guys running around. And
no, like, he was making some throws, dude. He was.
I'm not saying he didn't make throws. Don't get me wrong, but like Kyle McCord's strength as a prospect was his arm strength.
Well, I guess so. I think it is natural to want to explore a change just like out of curiosity. Like, I get that totally. What does anyone who wants to see a different quarterback play think is going to be different? There's no, like, if you say, okay, well, there's not the same playmaking element there that you have with Justin Fields. Like, of course there's not. And no one else in that room is doing that shit either.
No, I know. And I'm just playing devil's advocate here.
No, I understand that.
You know what I think. But what I do know, too, is that Ohio State fans are craving a quarterback where they feel like when he's on the field, he's going to do something special. And maybe that doesn't exist. But if you can rule out that it doesn't exist yet with C.J. Stroud, then I understand trying to view all your options to see if that exists somewhere else on the roster. Mm-hmm. Especially considering the fact that what else is on the roster are all-world talents in the recruiting realm at that position. Yeah. Now, it's going to be different. Nobody on this roster is ever going to be Justin Fields. And I don't think people had an appropriate appreciation for how good he was. He was the best quarterback in Ohio State history. And I know that we say that gradually, you know, as the years go on, you know, but he was.
Yeah.
And I just, I thought they were going to win, so this might sound contradictory, but I didn't think they were going to win because they're quarterback.
Yeah. But I don't know. I think that's all. I think that's fine. But so what, throw the other freshman in there and you feel better? Like, I just don't.
No, not. I mean, at that point, you couldn't. I'm just saying, like, in the first half when he was indecisive and when to run and when he was missing some guys or whatever, like, you might want to see a quarterback like McCord play. And I know you probably don't want to open up a can of worms of quarterback controversy questions every single week for the rest of the year, because all it takes is one time of doing that and you're like in that world, and that creates a cluster, you know, the way that it did in 2015, and then next thing you know, you lose your team over it. Like, I understand that is a very complicated and delicate situation. Yeah. I'm just explaining to you why I perceive people are eager to see that. And maybe that's not true, but like, I also would like to be like to see a quarterback who comes in and throws a laser down the middle of the field to a wide open Garrett Wilson for a touchdown in a very critical moment. And it's just like, I wasn't expecting to see, I thought that Ohio State would score, but I wasn't expecting C.J. Stroud to be the transcending takeaway from the moment. But like, I also think it's possible that Kyle McCord could have been.
Yeah, I think it's
possible. If he were more apt to play.
Yeah. No, I think it's possible. Like, I mean, I do think Kyle McCord is good. And I think Quinn Ewers will be good when he's ready to play. So, like, I'm not saying, like, don't ever open a door for C.J. Stroud to give this job up. But I also thought, like, you can't have every week, well, like, boy, he looks kind of lost in the first half, and then he looks pretty good in the second half, and just be like, well, look how he bounced back. Like, at some point, you got to be good the entire game. So, like, I'm on board with that. I totally agree with that. But he's the guy that Ryan Day picked, and I think you have to let him, like, grow in the position. That said, he does need to be more willing to run the ball. A lot of those zone reads, there were. I'm assuming they're zone reads from the way they were blocking them. Like, there are opportunities for him to keep and run. Like, there's green space on his side of the field for him to run. Some of his scrambles where he's kind of just sitting back there waiting for somebody to get open,
Get your head taken off.
And then he, like, gets popped, or he runs for a yard, or he throws an interception like he did at the end of the game. Like, I think he's got to be more decisive in those moments on what he's doing. And part of me wonders, like, if he is hurt to some extent, to whatever degree he is injured, if there is any hesitancy about running the ball created because he is banged up. But then he also, like, had that run in the fourth quarter that got called back on what was not a holding penalty against Thayer Munford. So, like, I thought he showed a little willingness to do it there, but I think he's got to be willing to do that more. I think he can – no one is a Justin Fields-level playmaker. I think Stroud, like, could be a playmaker, not to that level, but a playmaker. But he's got to be a little quicker with those decisions and, you know, not putting himself in bad positions where he's one step from going out of the sideline, going out of bounds, and he's got to either throw the ball or take the sack. Like, he's got to process things quicker, I think, that way.
Here's my thesis. Are you ready for it? Mm-hmm. With as much talent as Ohio State has on its roster at the quarterback position, I don't think that they should have to settle for just fine.
I don't think they should have to settle for just fine either. I think C.J. Stroud's ceiling is certainly better than just fine. And you cannot live – I just don't think you can live in a world, especially where you have – it's not like C.J. Stroud – like, this isn't J.T. Barrett in 2017 where, like, there was a prolonged track record of, like, I don't know, above average at best quarterback play. C.J. Stroud, like, has played two games. And I just don't think you can play like that fast and loose with the position when like you have a bunch of young guys because you set it up this way. You picked one. You have to ride with them for a little bit. If we're talking, if we're having these same conversations, you know, 2-3 weeks from now, when they're playing teams that they have no, like they're not in jeopardy of losing, and it just doesn't look like CJ Stroud's getting any better, then maybe you start having those conversations about do we need to make a change. But I just don't think you can do that now. One, I don't think he's played poorly enough to have that discussion. And two, even if he was, I don't think that's a move you make right now.
Based on what you've seen from CJ Stroud so far this year, will he be the starting quarterback of the Michigan game?
Yes. Unless he's hurt. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I think so. One, partly because I think his struggles have been overblown quite a bit. And two,
you think it's just an easy target?
He's an incredibly easy target, yeah. And I'm not saying he's played perfectly. He hasn't. But I also don't think he's been terrible. And if you look at some of the reaction to his play, you would think he was playing like absolute dog shit, and he's not. But I also just like, I don't make assumptions about the guy that's behind him, particularly when we're just talking about a bunch of freshmen. Maybe if it's like a CJ Stroud was older, I'd be like, okay, can we see something new, please? But that's not this situation. So like, I think this is the guy that Ryan Day picked to be the starter. You have to give him a chance to grow in the position is the stance that I fall back on CJ Stroud.
Yeah, I mean, it's like now they're going into a portion of their schedule where he's going to play great no matter what.
Yeah.
Like, it's just like, okay, well, you know, he's going to throw for 400 yards and 4 touchdowns the next 3 weeks.
They're also going to get into some games where the young guys are going to play. And people are finally going to get eyeballs on Kyle McCord and Jack Miller and possibly Quinn Ewers in an actual ball game. So that could lead to some more interesting reactions as well.
Yeah, no, I mean, this is the hardest. This has always been the hardest thing about Ohio State's schedule. It's like now we're going into that weird dormant part of the season where the team is inherently and clearly and visibly flawed, and they've already paid the ultimate consequence for being flawed, mm-hmm. which is losing. And now we've got to watch them play a bunch of overmatched opponents that aren't going to help us get any answers about whether or not anything's being fixed. And it's just like now we've got to go into this weird cocoon where you and I are podcasting about this team. And it's just like in the back of your head, it's like, they suck. They suck. They suck. And it's just like, they don't not suck until they beat somebody good, and they don't play somebody good until like my baby's 5. So like, she's not even here yet. So it's just like, okay, well, you know, enjoy the games, watch the games, enjoy the 500 yards of offense they're going to put up next weekend. And Trevion Henderson's probably going to score a lot, and it's going to be fun. And it's just like, now it's just like, as a football consumer, I want answers to my questions, and I feel like it's going to be a month until we get them. And it's like, and even then, I just like, I don't know. Like I said, are we sure that Oregon is not better than Minnesota? And it's just like, I still freaking feel that way. Like, I don't think their quarterback is particularly impressive. Their skill, like Verdell is fine. Like he's good, but like he ran through holes that you would have gotten 20 yards out of.
That's right.
Like those sweeps to the left, like you could have like high stepped like Deion Sanders.
I would have too.
Into
I
the end zone. Would have. Like, yeah. And it's just like, I'm not sure that Oregon is better than Penn State. Or the way that Michigan, I don't know, like Michigan is hard to gauge right now because they've looked this good in the past before and
they haven't played a good team yet. No.
They play Wisconsin and then they lose, but it's just like they kick the crap out of Washington. Penn State got a huge win against Wisconsin week 1 and beat the crap out of Ball State week 2.
Yeah.
I just like, I mean, I'm super excited for the Clemson-Ohio State semifinal. It's going to be great. But like, I want to just know what's going on with this team. And it's just like, I don't know if you'll be able to, can you think you'll be able to sense schematic changes when they play crappy teams? Or is it going to be single high, boring ass defense? You know, every week until they play somebody good. When's the date of when they play somebody good next?
Do you consider Indiana good?
No, I don't.
On Halloween weekend against Penn State.
Okay, great.
In the shoe. Real quick, before we wrap up, they figured out who their good running backs are. Mayan Williams and Trevion Henderson were the only running backs who played against Oregon.
Yeah.
That was a step in a positive direction.
What were the total stats on that? They rushed for 68 yards total?
No, they rushed for 120-something.
I was being sarcastic. I just don't remember any good plays.
You don't – No, I thought, like – see, the idea that – so here are the numbers here. Mayan Williams had 77 yards on 14 carries, and Trey Henderson had 54 yards on 12 carries. And, like, those numbers, when consumed with the knowledge of how Ohio State blocked in that game, I think actually are, like, kind of encouraging. Like, they were creating stuff out of nothing, particularly Trevion Henderson, who, like, got tackled on one play 5 yards in the backfield, then shook the guy off of him, and then ran for 11 yards and broke, like, three other tackles in the process. Like, those dudes are – I think Trevion is obviously very special, and Mayan Williams is pretty good. So I thought it was good that they just played those two and didn't play anybody else. Now, do the same thing on defense, and maybe things will start trending in a more positive direction.
Yeah, we need the offensive coordinator to go on defense and be like, here are your good players, now play them. Do that.
Right. Do that.
You know the thing that stinks is that I like Carey.
No, so, yeah. Well, that's yeah. I think everyone who's covered Carey likes talking with him. And he's a very good recruiter. He's been a good defensive backs coach here. Like, and
he loves his players and he loves his position.
Yeah,
you know, and like he loves Ohio State, and it's just like I'm sure he's having a really hard time right now.
Yeah, he is. He also gets paid $1.5 million to do the job.
That's a lot of money
to have a functional defense, which he doesn't have. But I will say, and I asked him this because I was just and Doug Lee Maurice kind of asked him the same thing. It's like this is. We don't know what Kerry Combs' preferred defensive scheme is, but he inherited this one. And I don't think this, if he was given, you know, total power over what this thing looked like, I don't think this is what it would look like.
What would it look like?
I have no idea. I don't know. Probably more like what they were playing in 2014 with the quarters coverage. But I don't think it would be this. And the other thing about this defense is that nobody else plays it because it's really hard. You have to have dudes all over the place, like they had in 2019, to play this defense. I don't know why they play it. So I want to Kerry Combs has not done a good job. I would like to maybe see him get like one game where he gets to do what he wants to do before like we ultimately like close the book on Kerry Combs as defensive coordinator, but I don't know if we're going to ever see that.
And I don't know if it's possible.
Yeah, I just think this is what they're going to do.
It's like, yeah, it's just too much of a wholesale change.
Yeah, yeah.
But I don't know. Like, there's two ways of looking at it. Young players don't know what they're doing. They're moldable. Or young players don't know what they're doing, and if you change it now, they're going to go crazy.
Yeah. I mean, if there was ever a time in the schedule in the regular season to change some things up, it would be when you're playing Tulsa and Akron and Rutgers and Maryland with a bye week.
I'm not even going to watch the Akron game.
I'll be there, so I'll watch it.
Okay. Just host the show after it alone. I just like I can't. Like I am actually anxious thinking about talking for an hour after they beat Akron 59-0.
Well, we'll
I just like it's just like what are
we'll
we
talk about? We'll talk about Trevion Henderson's 300 rushing yards.
Yeah, I know, but it's just like, oh god.
Yeah, these games suck. They're not fun to watch.
Yeah, I think they suck even more when you know there's a problem.
Right.
They're not quite as shitty when things are good, and it's like you get to, you know, wait till they play a good team to actually have that showdown. It's like Ohio State had that showdown and failed, and now we have got to wait.
Yeah, it felt like there's times where like you play these games, but it feels like you're in the midst of building towards something. And right now, it feels like they got to like tear it down to the studs a little bit, while also playing these bad games.
weird times.
Weird times.
All the goals still out there.
Absolutely.
Still watch. Still enjoy it. But we don't candy coat this shit, man. It was awful on Saturday.
They're not.
It was truly awful.
They're not. By Ohio State's standards, they are not a particularly good football team right now. It's not to say they can't get better, but right now they're not good enough. And that's on both sides, I think, but especially on defense.
But one last thing. Let me close on this. When Ryan Day first took over, and this is like, I think an Athletic created thought, and I think a lot of people take it. But like the Nick Saban ruthlessness thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we talk about it regularly on the show. Mm-hmm. But he's now in a very critical position in his tenure, I think.
Yep.
Where you are the he can't lose mantra, and, you know, all the, I think it was always going to come to this at some point. You're not going to go undefeated. It came a little bit sooner than we were anticipating, but it's here. It's like, what do you do if you're Ryan?
I don't know. The thing that's a little hard for me in all of this is not knowing exactly like where the directives defensively are coming from. Because like the structure is Ryan Day's structure that Kerry Combs is running. And if Ryan Day is just like telling Kerry Combs like, hey man, this is our defense, run our defense, figure this out, then I guess like step one for Ryan Day would be to like stop doing that. It's a little interesting to me how influential Ryan Day as an offensive leaning head coach is on Ohio State's defensive philosophies. And I would like to see that change.
That sounds like a Tuesday question to me.
But I don't. It's not to say that if he stopped being so influential that they would automatically be good, but I'm a little curious like what it might look like if he just kind of let the defensive staff do his thing and figure this thing out and do whatever was necessary to get it figured out, rather than shoehorn a coordinator into a defense that he's never run before. But it could just turn out that Ryan Day, tasked with making an important hire after his first season, did not make a good one. So, and then given the opportunity to rectify that after the 2020 season, did the minimum amount required of him to fill out a staff and didn't change anything. So we'll see. I don't know. Like it was, I think that's...
Which is more important than calling plays.
Yeah, like recruiting is...
Doing right in those scenarios.
Recruiting is number one and making the right staff decisions is number two. And like they're recruiting well. And his first staff, I thought, was a really good staff. And this current iteration of this staff has something to prove, in my opinion. So...
Yep.
At least on the defensive side. So yeah, no, it is an interesting juncture for Ryan Day. I will say, like, he didn't, after Urban lost, it looked like he came into a press conference, looked like somebody kicked his puppy. Ryan Day didn't look like that. Didn't act like that. Didn't answer questions that way. I don't know what that means. Probably means nothing. But I thought it was an interesting character study. But yeah, I'm curious, like you are, to see how Ryan Day reacts to this, because as I just said, they're not good enough.
Yeah, when Ohio State lost, Urban Meyer was like about to cry.
Yeah.
And not like in a sissy way. I think it was like out of a frustration way, because he was at the end of his pitiful rope at that end in those moments. But yeah, you know, that's the weirdest thing about college football, man. I'll catch you in November. We'll talk about it. You know,
we'll get all this sorted out on Halloween when Ohio State plays Penn State. In the meantime, they have five other games in a bye week before then. We'll figure it.
We bought a Halloween outfit for my unborn baby girl. She's going to be a flamingo this year.
Love that. What are you what are you dressing as?
I don't know. I've got to be a bird, I think, of some sort, because we got to match, right?
That's right.
I want to be like Father of the Year, you know, and you know, we'll go from there. But it's just like I anticipate watching the Ohio State game dressed like a flamingo.
There you go. You could dress dress like a bird. You can dress like Jalen Hurts.
You're going to say that. I got to be a bird of some sort. Okay, yeah. What eagle are you going to be? we're in a group chat with some other friends, and somebody said the Eagles are the most influential band of all time, and Landis responded, "Go Birds."
Yeah. Anyway, enjoy the NFL football on Sunday. The NFL's back. Maybe that.
Yeah, the dogs are going to bark.
Dogs are barking on a Sunday.
Or on Sunday.
Maybe that can distract you from Ohio State going through it a little bit. But as Ari said.
But hey, I want to say one more thing. Yeah. I know you're trying to wrap up. I want to say one more thing. The one thing that we were talking about before the episode started, which I thought was funny, is the pain scale. And it was just like, it really sucked to be an Ohio State fan on Saturday, but you are not alone.
Certainly.
It was really crappy to be a Notre Dame fan. They didn't lose, but it sucked being a Notre Dame fan. It really, really sucked being an Iowa State
fan. By the way, can I say something on Notre Dame?
Yeah.
Everyone who, and who's to say what could happen moving forward, but there's a lot of, I can't believe Ohio State didn't hire Marcus Freeman. I can't believe we have Kerry Combs. Marcus Freeman's defense stinks at Notre Dame, too. Okay, you can move on.
Sounds like a column to me. Notre Dame is probably going to lose in 2 weeks to Cincinnati. Iowa State came in as the favorites, maybe? Or, no, not the favorites, but the odds-on favorite to beat the favorite in the Big 12, and they got their butts kicked by Iowa. And Iowa, by the way, might be really good this year.
Yeah, I think it's...
Stanford beat the crap out of USC. So that's another year of the Clay Helton walking up the sidelines like a ghost. that was... And I have YouTube TV in 4K now. And watching that in 4K was quite the show. Okay, and Arkansas beat the crap out of Texas. Welcome to the SEC, Steve Sarkisian. Utah, a top 25 team, got their butts kicked in a rivalry game. Miami almost lost to Appalachian State. What am I forgetting here? Tennessee's first loss of the Heupel era came to Pitt. Northwestern hung 24 in Indiana State. I'm trying to think. There's one bigger one too, right?
Wasn't there another? Oh, did you say Florida State lost to losing to Jacksonville State?
Yeah, Florida State lost to on a Hail Mary to Jacksonville State, and that's the big one that I forgot. And by the way, there were 0 seconds on the clock, and the defensive backs ran parallel to the person with the ball. Did you watch that?
I watched that the last play. Yeah,
I watched it 1,000 times. I cannot figure out why they didn't try to tackle him. Like, is there a fix going on there? Like, what happened there? Yeah, explain that.
Point
to
shaving
me.
Happening? Maybe. Yeah, I don't know.
I can't come to terms with that. Kansas State almost lost to Southern Illinois. Indiana got their butts kicked last week. Washington is the worst team in the history of college football. Ohio State is in the top 5 of pain scale because losing is worse than almost losing. Even losing to a good team is worse than almost losing to a bad team, right?
Yeah, losing is worse than winning, yeah.
There's a lot of schmatz in college football this year. to borrow a word that my mom would say. There's a lot of schmatz out there.
Yeah.
The reason why I love college football is that 95% of these teams suck, and then there's Alabama. Yeah. So, like, you know, Clemson's already suffered a loss in which they scored 0 points. It's like, I try to fast forward, because this shit's going to be relevant. I know we're going long, but Ohio State just got their butts kicked, so we're going to go long. We're going to go live, okay?
Do it live.
What do you think is going to look worse in week 9 when we're having college football playoff debates? Clemson getting shut out basically by Georgia and not being able to get a first down, or Ohio State's performance against Oregon? Like, which ones do you think is going to be a worse loss? Ohio State's?
Yeah. Well, I guess it depends. Like, going off of like where the teams will be ranked, yes. Because Oregon will be ranked. Well, I don't know. I guess.
No, I mean, like, which one do you think is going to look worse? Because Georgia is probably going to be a top 5 team at that point. But you know what? Georgia could be Georgia and end up losing a weird game, too. But Clemson and Ohio State are in very similar scenarios right now.
Yeah, except that Clemson's schedule the rest of the way is like absolutely terrible, right? Like, at least Ohio State plays Penn State.
Still got to play North Carolina in the ACC championship game. I'm not letting go of that one.
North Carolina, which also has a loss.
Yep. Everyone has a loss. Everyone's 1-1.
Yeah. Except for Alabama.
Except Bama.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, I guess like losing to Oregon will look worse, but I think Oregon like might not lose the rest of the year because the Pac-12 is not good. So
I guarantee you Oregon will lose.
Yeah, I mean I would bet
they're absolutely going to lose. They're not that good. That's what's the most frustrating thing about what happened to Ohio State, I think. They're fine. They're a fine team. They're going to lose.
Yeah, I think they'll lose too. They're a pretty good team.
Maybe to a bad team. Good team. They're the type of team that's going to get upset by UCLA or Cal.
Yeah. Like if Oregon was in the Big Ten, I think like
they could absolutely lose to Penn State.
Yeah, but I think like right now if Oregon was in the Big Ten right now, you'd say they were at worst the 4th best team in the Big Ten.
Yeah, they're fine.
So they're fine.
Yeah, they're fine. They're not great. Ohio State was supposed to be a transcendent national championship contender, and they lost to a team that's fine.
Were they?
What?
Ohio State is always a national championship contender, so like I'll take that part out of it. Transcendent? I think we all knew that
transcendent in the sense that they're one of the 4 teams that were actually good enough to win it this year. That's what they were supposed to be.
I mean, the way the sport looks now, there's one team good enough to win it. So like, and
I don't know, man. I think Georgia's good enough.
Isn't Georgia's starting quarterback hurt?
Yeah, but it's like
aren't their best playmakers on offense hurt?
Yeah, and they just like have given up like 10 total yards this year.
Yeah, their defense is really good. You got to score. Yeah, I don't know. Like Georgia, I think Georgia is better than Ohio State right now, but like I don't think that's a tremendously wide gap. I don't know. It's like
Ohio State was supposed to be. Ohio State's usually in the club of Everybody sucks, but there's those three teams up there. Like, they're not usually down here in the crap. Okay, and right
they're
now
they're not in the crap. They're not in the crap. Alabama's in the clurb.
What's that word?
Clurb.
is that a word?
Yeah, Alabama is in its own club by itself. And maybe, club. And Georgia's like the first team, like they're waiting for the velvet rope, and they know the bouncer, so like they can get in probably pretty easily.
And they have a chain around their neck.
They have a chain around their neck.
Yeah,
yeah. And like one of those like weird T-shirts that's like not like it's like sweatshirt material, but it has short sleeves. And then like Clemson and Ohio State are there too. Like they're right behind them.
You got the undefeated blue blood still. You got Oklahoma, you got Georgia, and you've got Alabama. And now Oregon has to be in that mix too because they're 2-0.
Yeah, Oklahoma
almost lost to Tulsa in week one when they were displaced by a hurricane. Tulane, sorry. They played Tulane 2 weeks ago when they didn't have a home stadium to play in and almost lost. Yeah, I'm looking at the rankings right now. A&M almost lost to Colorado. Like, I mean, it's going to be maybe this will be a disaster of a year, but I'm excited to watch it. And I'm excited to, I mean, because like Ohio State will be 6-1 or 7-1 or 5-1 going into the Penn State game, and they'll be a top five team again. And just be like, okay, like, can they win a good game, a team against a good, it's like, okay, we'll get there. But it's like last year, I was banging my fist against the table that Ohio State was undeniably better than Texas A&M. And if that happens again, I am not going to do it unless their defense is different.
Yeah, no, like, that's fair. That's
I think Ohio State could be left out as a one-loss conference champion if there's other suitors that have similar resumes.
Which
have. And I think I would be fine with that.
That's what happened to them in 2018.
Yeah.
They're one-loss conference champion with a terrible defense. And then again, now they got their ass kicked and they're
one-loss. Well, they got their ass kicked by Purdue, yeah. So I mean it's a little different. But yeah.
But no, I don't – to wrap it up, they're not in a great spot. I'm not super optimistic that the defense could get like markedly better, but maybe they can fix some things to not be as bad as they are now, and they can still win the Big Ten, and probably will still win the Big Ten and make the playoff. So I think the next 2 months is about trying to figure out if they're getting things fixed defensively and monitoring C.J. Stroud, too. Like he's got to continue to grow, but I think it's all – for me, it's all about the defense.
And that was our TED Talk.
Thank you for listening to 4 to 6 with A&B and sticking with us on a longer episode. Subscribe to The Athletic, theathletic.com/4-6. Still, I believe, gets you a 50% off discount. That deal, I think, is running for another week here. So you still have time to do that. Theathletic.com/4-6. Ohio State takes an L, 35-28 to Oregon. They're back at it next week against Tulsa. We'll have a show for you guys later in the week. Until then, thanks for listening.